This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
All right. Welcome to the Sub 70 podcast. This is Jay. Just want to give a quick introduction to the interview we did with Mark Hensby. Mark is a PGA Tour winner, the fifth major, the John Deere Classic. He is an Australian that moved to the United States as a teenager to try to take his game to the next level and make it on the PGA Tour. It's a very interesting story. He talks about growing up in Australia and learning how to play the game. Talks a bit about his time in the Chicago area, just trying to get into any tournaments he could get into, playing on the mini tours, state amateur events, and that sort of thing. He also talks about the sort of PGA Tour learning curve and process of, you know, being very successful as an amateur and getting on the tour and getting your card, and then trying to get into that process and still stay successful once you make it on tour, which is something that I think a lot of people take for granted. You know, they think once you get your card, you're just going to be a professional golfer for the rest of your life. And unfortunately, that's not the case for most guys. So if you have any feedback, please hit us up on social media at GolfSub70. Thanks to Mark for the time, and here's the interview.
Well, I would like to welcome to the Sub 70 podcast PGA Tour winner, European Tour winner, and President's Cup team member, Mark Hensby. Mark, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, no worries, Jason. Thanks so much for having me on, mate.
So how are things in Arizona? How are things going with your golf game and sort of your progression, and how are things overall for you at this point?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. I was just spent some time in Australia, actually. I just got back last week. So played a fair bit of golf down there, and game seems like it's in pretty good shape. I just had a little hand issue fixed up, which I've been, had for the last year or two. So it's going to be about 2 weeks before I can play. But, getting everything taken care of for when I can come back and start playing.
Yeah, and the next question I'm going to bring up is one that I have to kind of get to, but it kind of will correlate with where you're kind of going after it's over. So with the drug suspension from the PGA Tour, I read your side of it. From what I understand, it was just sort of a frustrating situation after a bad tournament, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I'll give you a forum to explain sort of what happened, and then are you still planning to play professionally after this is over and kind of move on?
Yeah, as I said in the statement, I pretty much thought my career was over. I wasn't really interested in golf at the time. And, obviously shooting six over and then asked to do a drug test. And it's not like, as I said, they said I refused it. I didn't refuse it completely. I said I'd be there the next day to do it. As I said, if it had been a blood test, it would have been done straight away. Their stipulations are it has to be done on that time, that they ask you, and the next day is not good enough. So, that's what kind of caused the banning. But, obviously now I have to being away from it for a while. Obviously, I want to still play. And as I said, at that time, I didn't really want to, but, obviously when you're having a lot of time off and golf's your life and it's been your life for so many years, it's just hard not to want to do it again, that's for sure.
Yeah, having this time off, does it kind of give you a little bit of a perspective of how much you do love golf still, and you still have time to play, and the Champions Tour is not that far away for you, so are you sort of remotivated at some level too of when you get back out there, you're ready to get after it and play some good golf?
Yeah, I think that definitely the time away is, it makes you realize a lot of things. I think, I would love to have a year or so on tour. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't believe that I'm ever going to be a Rory McIlroy or anyone like that. But certain courses you can compete at my age on, especially if you stay in decent shape and You know, Fred Funk won the Players Championship at 48, and Kenny Perry should have won the Masters at 48, or could have, you know. So, you know, I mean, that's the thing about golf. It's such a, you know, such a sport that you can play for such a long time. And so, you know, I mean, yeah, definitely remotivated to a certain extent. And, you know, I'm looking forward to having a chance to, you know, at least prove myself again, you know, on tour for maybe a year or so before I try and get to that Champions Tour.
Will you have an exempt status then because you have a win on the PGA Tour in that 48 and 49-year-old category on the web when you want to get back out there?
Yeah, I think that just depends on, from what I understand, is how many guys at my age are going to be in that category at that time. But, yeah, I'd definitely have a chance to be playing on the web on that, under that category. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, it really just depends who's up, and because it goes on money, I guess, career money. Yeah, we'll at the time that comes around, I'll kind of know where I'm at.
So back in Australia, when you first started playing golf, how did you get the bug, and who introduced you to the game, and how did you start finding your passion for it?
You know, it was funny because I just played a rugby match and rugby league, and one Sunday afternoon, a friend of mine up the street, Jason Taggart, his name was, said, "Do you want to go play golf?" And obviously, you know, no one played golf, so we always thought it was just an old man sport. So anyhow, that's how I kind of got introduced. He had a set of clubs. He went down and played 9 holes on the golf course, and I had a birdie my first ever game, and so that kind of got me interested. And you know, then I started going every Sunday, and then you know, obviously every day, and I pretty much gave up pretty much all the other sports at the age of 15 and just concentrated on golf. So that's kind of how I got into it.
And then if I read this correctly, you left home at 16 basically to work on your golf game, and then you worked at the post office as well to sort of supplement that, and just kind of went all in at that point on it?
Yeah, I actually 17, I left home. And yeah, I worked a bunch of different jobs for a certain period of time and saved up money. And you know, the good thing about the post job was, you know, it started at 5 in the morning, so you know, you're up at 4, but you're done by lunchtime, so I could practice in the afternoon. So, you know, but before that, I was washing dishes at night in a restaurant a couple of days a week. And so there was just a few odd jobs here just to save up money to come to the States, yeah.
How good was your game at that point when you were 17 or 18 years old? Were you playing in high-end amateur events? And, you know, how close were you at that time to saying, I really want to turn pro and make a go of this full-time on a professional level?
Yeah, I think when I was 15, I was better than I was when I was probably 18, 19. For some other reason, I was, you know, I shot 7 under par when I was 14 in a tournament. So I felt like there was a few years there where obviously, you know, I didn't have the support that I probably needed at the time. And, you know, even though I had the drive and the, you know, I think if I had lived in America at that time, things would have changed. You probably would have been on tour at the age of early 20s, you know. You know, I think, you know, I definitely was playing decent in amateur events, but also, you know, you're playing against guys who are just playing golf. And I was working at the time. So, you know, I got through into the match play of the Australian Amber a couple of times, but got knocked out in the second round once and the first round another time, but one was by the eventual winner 1 year. But, you know, I won a few events. You know, I was on a state team in Australia, so, you know, New South Wales, played for them and went undefeated in the junior series. So, you know, I was still good, but I felt like I was probably a bit better when I was a little younger.
And then in 1994, you wind up in the United States, and I'm just curious, how did you wind up in Chicago of all places to kind of get your professional golf game started?
Yeah, well, I came over as an amateur, and there were some people from Australia that remembers at the golf course that I used to practice at. It was just a public golf course, but some of the members that were there knew a guy that lived in Chicago and his family, and he'd lived there and was working there, and that was how I got the opportunity to come to America. And so I lived with them, and they left after about 6 months of me being there, maybe 9 months. They moved back, so. But that's how I got my start in Chicago, yeah.
And then I read that you even had to sleep in your car at Cog Hill, and we're outside Chicago, so it's kind of an interesting story of hanging out at Cog Hill. And if you did do that, I give you credit, man. That's a lot of dedication to your craft and getting it done. I mean, that shows some real perseverance that you were totally all in at that point and trying to get to the top level.
Yeah, I just missed the first stage. No, second stage of Q School that year, because I went to Q School, got through the first stage in Indiana, and then missed second stage, and I had nowhere to stay. I was staying in the clubhouse at Cargill for a little bit. There was, you know, upstairs, and then, you know, once in a while, I couldn't get in. So, you know, the story's obviously gotten blown out of proportion. You know, I didn't sleep in my car for months at a time, but it was just, you know, nights here and there, and, you know, that went on for about a month. Yeah, the range manager, Ronnie Bridges at the time, he caught me sleeping there, and he kind of helped me, or the golf course helped me find some, you know, accommodation. So that's how that all turned out.
And then I know you won the Illinois State Am in 94, and then pretty quickly after that, you're turning pro. So when you turned pro, which tours did you play, you know, in the States, and then how long did it take you to get on to the nationwide tour, which was the where web.com tours nationwide back then, for you to start playing on a pretty major tour? How did that process happen?
Yeah, you know, the first couple of years just playing state opens and just anything you could really play in, you know, mini tours and South Florida tour. And then I think in 97, which was the Nike tour back then, actually, and that was my first year of actually, you know, getting on a tour. So it took a couple of years before I actually got on. But then once I got on there, I didn't get my PGA Tour card, so then I went back to Q School, got back on the Nike Tour again, then I won in 98, and that kind of got everything going. I think that's when you start to, you know, believe that you can play out there, and then I think 2000 is when I got my card the first time. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That was my next question. On winning on the Nike Tour, web.com tour, that has to do a tremendous amount for your confidence. A, you got to, you know, you're going to be playing at least out there again, and a really good chance to get to the PGA Tour, and also, I mean, the competition on that tour is really, really good. To win at that level must have had a really positive effect on your career going forward.
Yeah, and I think more so the way I won. You know, I had a 2-shot lead, and I was in Fort Smith, and it was in, you know, David Begonia and Woody Austin starting the day. So I was really, really nervous, and I went out and I shot 30 the first nine, and then, you know, I ended up shooting 65 and winning by two. So I think, you know, when you win that way, you definitely give you a lot of confidence that you can do it when you need to do it. So, I think, you know, then having the next year, my dad died. So I had a lot of issues in 99 and 2000. I had, you know, I led, I think, the web.com tour for most of the year. The money list just got pipped at the end. So, it definitely gives you a lot of confidence, because if you went anywhere now, you've played some good golf, that's for sure.
And then you get on the PGA Tour, and then another victory back on the web.com, or which would have been nationwide maybe then at that point, or that tour per se. And then your first go around the PGA Tour, you didn't keep your card. And I guess my question is, was there a big difference that you saw between talent on the web.com tour versus the PGA Tour? Or is it just a hard transition because you don't know the golf courses of getting out on the PGA Tour the first go around? And then, you know, obviously in 04 when you got back out there again, the results were really, really strong. So is it just kind of a learning process of getting out there that first year and kind of seeing how you acclimate to it?
Yeah, you know, I think 2001, you know, I got off to a decent start on the tour. And then, you know, I didn't really have a full-time caddy. I did for 3 weeks, and then he went back. He was working with Frank Nobler because Frank was injured at the time. And then, you know, I was just kind of lost. And to be honest, once you start going south, and the other thing is you're playing against the best players in the world on the courses they've played every year. So, you know, and not that that's any excuse. I didn't play well either on top of it. But, you know, my confidence went down, and, you know, the more and more, the worse I played, that my confidence got lower, and obviously I didn't keep my card. But, you know, you kind of, it was a learning process, that's for sure. And as you said, when I came back out the second time, I knew what to expect. And I had a better grasp of things, and you know, it's you know, when you get to somewhere where you've always wanted to get to, sometimes it's like, oh, I made it, but then, you know, you really haven't made it until you actually start playing well out there. So there was a few things I think was the reason why I probably didn't play well that year, but as I said, the second time around, I kind of had it down pat.
Yeah, in 2004, you win, at least it's my fifth major, the John Deere Classics. That's kind of our home tournament out here. Had to be awesome. I mean, I can't imagine what that feeling is like to win at the highest level. It has to be great. And then also to kind of do it where you started your professional career, you know, near Chicago, it had to be you know, friends out there, it had to be just a fantastic feeling.
Yeah, you know, and you probably didn't remember, but I almost won the Western Open the week before. I was in the last group with Stephen Ames. And, you know, I was tied for the lead on 13 in a bad second shot, and it kind of took me out of it. I finished third, so I went third win. Still to this day, obviously winning a John Deere was, you know, really special, but that one at the Western Open probably stung a lot because, you know, obviously that was where I started my golf in Chicago pretty much. And you know, Frank Jemsek and everyone at Cog Hill had been, you know, so much, you know, such a part of my career at that time, and just a win there would have been so special. But, you know, obviously win at the John Deere the following week was, you know, really, really, really cool.
And then you're obviously trending the right way. In 2005, you get to play in all of the major championships. So my question is, what major did you enjoy or do you enjoy playing in the most, and why is that major your favorite?
That's a hard question because they're all pretty decent. I mean, the two that I really like are the Masters and the Open Championship. And the Masters, just because it's just a special place, and it's just, you know, it's such a small field and the crowds are just really well behaved, and it's just in most cases. it's just such a, it's just, there's something about that place that just makes it special. And I, to this, still now, I don't know what it is. And the Open Championship, because you've just got, you know, anyone can win. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you hit it 400 yards off the tee or 280, anyone can win that because, you know, you're dealing with elements, you're dealing with, you know, a lot of strategic stuff where bunkering's put, you know, you wonder why a bunker's there and all of a sudden the wind blows from a different direction. And so the courses over there are just so much fun to play because, you know, there's just so many different elements to it. So they're my two favorite majors, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it seems like the Open Championship, and I've talked to other guests before, it just seems like even over the last 10 years, it's, I mean, it was always huge, but now it just feels like it's the world's championship, like the biggest of all of them. Like the magnitude of the event seems to be getting even bigger and bigger.
Yeah, definitely. It seems that way. I mean, when Phil and Henrik went head-to-head there, and even last year, you know, with Jordan Spieth win, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just an event that just, it's just really cool. I mean, but the Masters are a totally different vibe. So, but they're both, you know, they're my both favorite ones, that's for sure.
And then you got to be on the President's Cup team, which had to be an amazing experience. You're captained by Gary Player. What's your memories of the week and how enjoyable was that experience?
Yeah, you know, it was never something that I strive to be on. I mean, the President's Cup to me, I was like, you know, even though it's such a great event, don't get me wrong. So when I got on, I didn't really know what to expect, but you know, it's fun, but it's also, you know, we played in the States and just, you know, you just, the crowds are different, you know, it's not as bad as the Ryder Cup, but you know, it's, you know, you feel like you're out there entertaining and then it's, you know, a lot of people are, you know, that get a bit too much to drink and start yelling out some nasty stuff, you know, and that's unfortunate. And I know in the Ryder Cup it's worse, but, you know, that was the only part I didn't enjoy about it. The rest of it was just awesome. You know, I mean, just, you know, there's it's more nerving than any other tournament I've ever played, that's for sure, from the whole one, because it's just, you know, you've got partners, you've got a team. It's just a whole different atmosphere. That, you know, I played a lot of match play golf in Australia, so I knew what match play was all about, but under those pressures and that, you know, and under that atmosphere, it was definitely an experience I'll never forget.
So there's more pressure than team event than even, I mean, obviously you played well in majors before, so that pressure is even different than major championship pressure.
Yeah, I felt it. I mean, I had a chance, I would say, at the back nine at the US Open in 05 at Pinehurst, and you know, but you rely everything on you, where, you know, when you're playing a foursomes or you've got a partner, I mean, you know, it's not that they care, I don't think, if you let them down, but, you know, you just feel a little bit worse, where when you're playing by yourself, it's all on you. And it's just a different pressure, I think.
And then in 2005, the season keeps going well. You win on the European Tour, beating Henrik Stenson. Another great victory that had to also sort of, once again, your confidence has to be at all-time high at this point. Can you talk about playing against Henrik in that playoff and getting the job done?
Yeah, you know, that was funny because I played with him the first two rounds and we were kind of neck and neck. I was just a few shots, and then Saturday we didn't play together, and Sunday I think he finished earlier than me, and I had to birdie the last two holes, which I did to get into the playoff and then win. And pretty much that was just before, I think, the PGA and before the President's Cup. But, yeah, definitely my career was headed in the right direction. And, you know, I felt comfortable and you know, I was, you know, I think I got to 27th in the world at that time. And yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, you know, everything became easy. You know, everything was, you know, it's a comfort level. You know, now my comfort level was in that kind of arena where, you know, it takes years to get to that. And so, yeah, my confidence was where it should be. And I was playing at a comfort level, which was really high.
And then in 2006, when I was doing the background info here, you had a pretty good, pretty nasty car accident. What did that take out of you physically? And was that a real game changer on the trajectory of your career?
Yes and no. I think that it did. I kind of hurt my left hip, and I guess there was a lot of things that went on in that accident. My son was in the front, and seeing him pass out and get air-vacked in a helicopter was obviously frightening for any parent. He was only six. And so I think that, you know, it kind of hit me to, like, man, life's short, you know. I mean, we could have died, and it was like, the car was written off completely, really. Then I started playing golf, and I couldn't even get under my left side, but I still wanted to keep playing, and I played through injury and then got into some bad habits, and kind of the rest is history, you know. I mean, I was just trying to get it around the golf course. I remember only playing nine holes in the 2006 Open Championship as a practice round. That's all I played because I just couldn't walk, really. But yeah, there was a lot of things that happened that day that kind of shocked me, and you know, it kind of turned my career around to the other way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's totally understandable. I mean, I've talked to other golfers on the podcast, and man, once an injury like that starts, the swing habits can change. You don't really realize you're doing it. I mean, it's a tough thing to get over. I was talking to Robert Gomez, and he had a car injury or a car crash with a pretty serious injury, and he said the same thing of how hard that was to come back, and your golf swing's not quite the same to play at that high of a level. So you're not the only guy I've talked to who've had these problems where then it can, you know, the rest of your game can be altered by an event like that. It's interesting. If we can talk about the current state of golf, do you watch golf? Are you a fan of golf? Or is it something when you're, you know, spending some downtime, you're really not paying that much attention to? I know guys can kind of go both ways on that.
Yeah, it depends on the tournament. I watch a little bit, but not much. It's, you know, golf for me is just hard to watch, mainly because they're not showing much. They're showing who they want to show, and I understand that's for the ratings, and that's kind of how people kind of get paid, through ratings. So, you know, unfortunately, golf course setups have been set up for the long hitters, and, you know, they can say that it's not, but it is. I mean, back when I first got on tour, there was rough, and the courses need rough. But, you know, I mean, so I golf's a little bit boring for me to watch right now. Even though we've got some exciting players, you know, I love watching Rory, that's for sure. And guys that, you know, that play like him, but I don't watch a lot of golf. No, I don't.
Well, since I was going to ask you about Rory next, and just I want to ask a professional golfer this question, because I thought it was really interesting that he was kind of struggling the last three or four tournaments from 125 yards. And then let's say he has a practice session with Brad Faxon, and bang, all of a sudden he's leading the field in putting, strokes gained, scrambling, et cetera, et cetera. Have you ever had a situation like that where one sort of a tip or one segment with a teacher and all of a sudden the light bulb can go on from being kind of, for lack of a better word, not on all cylinders to just bang, hitting it? Because I thought it was pretty amazing how he came back from, which was a weakness, into, obviously it was a strength, the week of the Arnold Palmer, and attributed it just to basically one practice session with Brad Faxon.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny that that just one thing can turn things around. I remember in Atlanta when I got beaten by a shot by Zach, I played terrible the first 2 days, and I was on, there was no spot on the side of the range, on the range. So I actually was just hitting balls with a ball about 3 or 4 feet above my feet at the edge of the range. And my caddy said, "Man, that looks pretty good." So I said, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Look at it." So we looked at it, and I don't know. I took that feel into the weekend, and I finished second, you know. So it's funny how little things can happen. But, you know, I mean, I heard that he took a lesson from Brad, and obviously Brad's a very good putter. But, you know, I think, you know, whether it lasts forever or whether it lasts, you know, whatever he told him obviously works that week. But, you know, we'll see how it goes over the next couple of weeks, because that's when you know it's really something that's, okay, this is it, you know. I mean, when it's – you're not going to always putt great, and you're not going to always – but if it can – if it's more consistent and you see results, you know, more and more, though, then you know you're on the right track. So I think over the next month, if Rory keeps doing what he's doing, obviously he can be thanking Brad a lot.
Did you have any other tour players that you kind of went to when you needed to say, take a look at this when you were on tour, or you had a set of eyes beyond a teacher or your caddy that you would kind of rely on from the guys that you kind of hung out with or were friends with?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, early in my career on the Nike tour, I think players helped each other more often, but the tour, they don't really do that as much. You know, it's definitely different out there now. I don't recall many players coming up to me and saying, "Hey," I think Pat Perez helped me one time. You know, there's a few guys, but overall, you know, I think guys just kind of stick to their own teachers now, and you know, there's not a lot of camaraderie when it comes to helping other guys. Obviously, everyone wants to beat each other now so badly. So, that's just the way it is now.
I was also going to ask you about Phil Mickelson. He's close to your age. And how impressed are you with his resurgence and level of play into his late 40s as he's doing it?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I played with Phil a few times, you know, back in the mid-2000s, and I think we played a Players' Championship, and we played at Akron World Golf Championship. And, you know, the thing is with Phil, he's just so talented. I mean, but, you know, with the arthritis that he had, I mean, at 47, to be still hitting as far as he is, I mean, he's a big man. But to be hitting as far as he is and still competing and doing what he's doing is just, yeah. But you can see he had longevity because of his golf swing, I mean, and just his talent itself. I mean, it's kind of like Tom Watson. You know, he almost won the British Open or the Open Championship at 60. So Phil's that sort of guy. I think if he's still keen, he's just got one of those actions and the set of skills that, you know, he can play forever.
As a fan, I'm always just not surprised, I guess, because he's so competitive, but the work he must be still putting into it and still wanting to do it when it's, you know, he obviously could retire and live great the rest of his life. You got to give him a lot of credit because he's got to be working his rear end off to be that competitive at that age. So it's, as a golf fan, it's cool to see.
Definitely, because you can't compete at that level without working hard, and that's for sure.
And the other comeback I have to bring up to you is the Tiger comeback. So from your perspective as a professional golfer, what are you seeing so far in this comeback, and what are your thoughts on his progression and the tournament golf that you've seen him in so far?
Yeah, I haven't watched him. I've just kind of, you know, but, you know, I've seen a couple of swings on Twitter and stuff. And I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest players probably to ever play the game. So, you know, I was one that didn't think he'd ever come back to, probably win again, I must admit. But obviously the results so far, the only difference I see with Tiger now is when Tiger hit the lead years and years ago, he won. Now it seems like, and I know he's only been back 4 tournaments, and I don't really care. If you're that good, I don't think it takes that long for a guy like that to get back to where he's, you know, back in contention, which he's proven already. I mean, you know, talent doesn't go away. But the thing about him is, you know, to get up there and, you know, do what he's done, but there's a difference. He used to win when he got the lead, and now I haven't seen that. Now, I think once he does win, I think then we'll probably see not a dominance like he was, but I think he'll win more often. But until he gets that win, I think he's still going to doubt himself a little, and that's kind of what you see, I think. But as I said, I haven't watched any.
Do you think the intimidation factor will still be against there against these younger kids, or did these kids grow up watching him and emulating him, meaning they kind of have that same attitude that he had, you know, i.e. your Patrick Reed doesn't think he's going to back down from anyone, or Justin Thomas or Spieth. You know, back in his day, he seemed like he won a lot of golf tournaments on the first tee, just, you know, standing there and the way he hit it. But these kids, the talent level is so good. Do you think he'll still have that edge, or is that sort of gone at this point, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I think, you know, with seeing him, I think he got to one with him. Bay Hill, did someone say last week? He was close there at one point, and then all of a sudden Rory just ran away, and a couple others ran away, Bryson DeChambeau. So, you know, back in the day when Tiger went on the lead, everybody, as you just said, they kind of stalled. Whereas these kids now, they just, okay, he's near the lead, let's go. So, you know, I don't think he's going to have the intimidation. Oh, I know he's not going to have the intimidation factor. These kids are so good now. And they all hit it as far as him, where Tiger always had that edgy hitter for him and most guys too. So, yeah, I think the intimidation factor's gone. But I think on the back nine of a major, if he's leading, and I think the guys know that he's done it so often, that I think that it could creep in a little bit at that point. But that's going to be hard to say. You know, Rory's already won three. And you've got to understand that Rory, and they're playing with house money. I mean, when you're worth as much money as Rory and Spieth and Thomas and all these guys, I mean, they got so much money. There's no pin they don't fire at. There's nothing they're afraid of. There's, you know, it just makes life on the golf course much easier when, you know, you don't have to live paycheck to paycheck, so to speak, or trying to keep a job.
Yeah, and I mean, I was even impressed, and I watched Bryson last year win the John Deere. I was out there on that Friday round when he put up like a 63, and, you know, the commentators were saying, well, is he going to be able to hold up under the pressure? And I thought to myself, I watched this kid from 18 holes. Of all 18 holes, he can really play. And I wasn't surprised one iota that he had the blinders on, he fired at pins, he played his game, he played aggressive, and was right there at the end too. These kids are so good anymore, and like you said, they fire at the pins, they're long. It's going to be a really interesting mix to see these old guys kind of playing well and these young kids who aren't afraid of anything, you know, kind of play golf over the next couple of years. It's going to be really entertaining.
It really is. And you know, the other aspect is, you know, when we were starting out, no one had money. Whereas now, you know, I was rooming with a guy last year that he was already had endorsements lined up for around $1 million. I mean, on the web. So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's just kind of, it's a different beast now. Golf used to be kind of, I think, a wealthier man's sport, but now it definitely is. I mean, you're not going to see too many guys coming from the boondock, so to speak, make it out on tour anymore, mainly because of the way they've changed it all. Also, I mean, there's no direct path to the PGA Tour. And in my mind, that's a bit of a pity.
Well, yeah, I mean, think of Bryson, and keep bringing him up, but you know, he was probably pretty much set for life the day he turned pro, between the Cobra contract, the Mike. I mean, the pressure's off at some level. And like I said, if you fire at a pin and you miss it that day, you know, you're not trying to make ends meet at that point. It's got to be a freedom to play golf that way of, you know, you fire at it next week, you fire at it again. And there's no I think there's no harm in playing aggressive golf and failing at this point. I think people almost expect the guys that when they're on, they're going to be really on. But, you know, they're going to have to go low to win, and that's how they play. So, like you said, it's a different thing from 20 years ago.
Oh, definitely. And you see it. You see the way the guys play. You know, they'll miss three or four cuts, and then they'll win. That's just the way the game's played now. But as I said, years ago, that was not the way it was played. You know, you kind of, you know, and I've seen both sides, trust me. I mean, I went from, you know, you're worrying about, you know, last check or whatever, as opposed to when I was in that comfort zone in 2005 where I didn't care if I missed a cut. And then next week I'd finish third. It was just, you just don't care. You just, and don't get me wrong, that's how you should always play, but it's a lot easier said than done.
Well, my other question I have for you is, Australian golfers seem like they'd be a good, fun group of guys to hang around. So when you're on tour, is there kind of a fraternity among the Australian golfers that are sort of playing the PGA Tour or the Web.com Tour when you're out there?
Yeah, I think, I wouldn't say we all hang. I mean, Peter Lonard, the guy I hung out with a bit, you know, the Apples, Stewie Appleby. So you know, but the thing about it is we're in a lunchroom, or one of us is in a lunchroom, usually the Australians will sit next to each other, you know. It's not like it's, you know, Jeff and I, we used to hang out a bit, Jeff Ogilvie, and obviously we played together a lot, 04, 05, but that's kind of where you're at the time. You know, everybody plays different schedules, so, but yeah, most of the Australians are pretty easy to get on with, you know. I mean, there's only a couple that are a little different, but most of us get on well.
Well, I have some names of Australian golfers, so if you can give me your quick thoughts on each player. There's no right or wrong answer, but I'll just kind of throw the name out there and give me your thoughts on these guys, if that's okay. Mark Leishman.
I don't know Mark very well, but from what I hear, I've played with him once. Just seems like a really laid back and one of the nicest guys, and obviously very talented.
Aaron Baddeley.
Bads is one of the best. I like Aaron a lot. I see him out here, lives in Phoenix. Always has time to talk, and I have a lot of time for Aaron. He's a great kid.
I don't know how well you know this young guy, but he's a heck of a good player so far. Cameron Smith.
I don't know Cameron at all, so yeah, I can't comment on Cameron. I don't know him, but he seems like a nice kid, and he seems, you know, obviously a very good player.
Robert Allenby.
Robert, well, that's a hard one. Despite what Robert's, media frenzies have been over the few years, you know, off the golf course, he's harmless. He's really easy to talk to, and you know, he's not a bad guy. I'm only going on my experiences with him. We've had some run-ins, don't get me wrong. But Robert's Robert. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, that's what I wanted to get your perspective, because sometimes with the media reports isn't, you know, just a one clip of one little incident, and I thought it'd be interesting to get
And the thing about Robert is, you know, the amount he's given back to charity and this and that. So, I mean, the unfortunate part is people don't see the good things that people do and only the bad. And that's where I think Robert falls into that category. You know, I mean, sure, he's brought some stuff on himself and there's obviously things that have gone down. But, you know, you got to look at the good things he does too. And you know, the amount of work for Jared Lyle, he supports so well. And obviously the Cancer Association that he's associated with. You know, he does a lot of stuff for charities and stuff. So, you know, in that respect, you know, I think you got to look at both sides of him.
Adam Scott.
Adam's a hard one because, you know, we were on the Presidents Cup team together. Adam's a secret guy. He's a nice guy, but it's very hard to get to know Adam Scott. Very hard.
Jeff Ogilvie.
Jeff's very smart. Jeff's probably one of the smartest guys when it comes to golf. And just a good guy. You know what? He's a straight shooter. He doesn't, he's Jeff. I like Jeff.
Jason Day.
Jason, I knew when he was younger. He came over and played ping pong at my house, actually at Greyhawk tournament here, when he was obviously only 18, 19. I think it's his second year on tour. Jason's a very nice guy. He was always very desired to be number one. That was his. You know, you could see that was in him. I haven't talked with Jason much over the last few years. To be honest, I don't know how he is now. But back then, when I was around him, he was a polite young kid and very driven, that's for sure.
And my last one here, Greg Norman.
Yeah, Greg Norman's not... he's not one of my favorites, and I'm not going to say. I grew up idolizing him, and then, you know... I didn't get to know him. I played with him once and, you know, just we had a little run in and not that I don't, you know, like him for that, but just, you know, he's done a lot for golf. I take my hat off to that. But as a person and as someone who I'd want to hang out with, he's definitely not one that I would want to do that with.
Well, that's why it's interesting to ask these questions. I love getting the different perspectives that some of the tour players have on the other tour players. And I have a few more questions for you. And once again, they're kind of on the more lighthearted side of stuff. So I know one guy who's not going to be in this next question I'm going to ask you. So if you could take three PGA Tour golfers, or they could be Champions Tour golfers, go out for a day, play golf, have a fun money game and drinks and dinner at night, who are you taking on this foursome golf trip?
Whew, that's a hard one. you know, probably Retief Goosen would be one. KJ Choi. And I'd have to say, you know what? And Ricky Fowler. I'm a big fan of Ricky Fowler. And And not just because he's a good golfer, but he just seems like a really cool kid. And he's probably the other one.
Goosen seems like he'd just be a cool guy to hang out with, like the silent assassin, right? Like his game is so good, but he's just got like this calm demeanor about him. I could play with that guy. Like I think he'd be a blast to sort of just watch hit the golf ball. It's so good, and then he's got like a cool personality, so I could see why you could potentially take him on that one.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun.
Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
I would say the putt to get into the playoff. There's probably two. The putt to get into the playoff against Henrik Stenson, because it was about 30 feet across the green. And then the bunker shot to get up and down to get into the playoff at the John Deere. I mean, that was on the downslope towards water. Not a great lie. And I hit the 3 feet and made it. So they're probably the two.
Best golf shot you ever saw another playing competitor hit under pressure that you were just blown away of how good that shot was or the quality of it?
Yeah, that's easy, that one. That's Tiger's 6-9 in Canada.
Yeah, that's the second time someone's brought that up. That's got to be – that's one of the best golf shots as a fan I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that's crazy to hit a 6-iron from that generation, what, over water? I mean,
and straight at it, and just – I mean, obviously in the playoffs, so everything's on the line. I mean, it's – yeah, that's – I mean, to me, that's probably the greatest shot I've ever seen.
Who had the most raw natural talent of any professional golfer you ever played with?
Tiger or Phil? Tiger and Phil are the two.
And my last question for you, three best golf courses in the world that you've played, and what makes those three golf courses so special?
Kingston Heath, Carnoustie, and I haven't played Pine Valley yet, but I hear that's awesome. The three best I've played is those two, and I'd have to say Royal Melbourne. And I know there's two of them are in Australia, but and the reason why I chose all those is because you use every club in the bag, every shot you got to think about, just the variety of holes is just amazing on those three golf courses.
If you had to pick Kingston Heath, because this is a debate all the time that goes back and forth, Kingston Heath over Royal Melbourne, and you could only play one for the rest of your life, which of the two is the best? I'm just curious.
Well, there's two courses at Royal Melbourne, and the composite course is the one that's the awesome one, and you can't play it all the time. So, but to me, Kingston Heath's my favorite. I mean, Kingston Heath by far is my favorite.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm really going to look forward to watching you getting back out there again, hopefully late this year or next year, and playing on the web a little bit. And I appreciate your time and in doing this. So I've really enjoyed it.
No worries, Jason. Thanks for having me on, mate. Appreciate it.